Dave Glad. He's the director of North Dakota's Department of Environmental Quality, and he joins the program. Sure. Dave, I wanted to have you on to walk me through the way this works. And I understand we should probably start here. You're the director of the North Dakota Department of Environmental Quality. Can I still say it's the new department? How long has this been in operation now?
Since April of this year. So, yeah, we're relatively new. The honeymoon's almost over.
Yeah, it doesn't. The honeymoons don't last long when you're in public office and public work, does it, Dave? But
that's correct.
I wanted to put that out there because my first question is, you know, going to the situation that's being reported unfolding right now when it comes to this One Oak gas processing plant in 2015. That was reported to the Department of Health, of which you were a part of then. Is now that responsibility just shifted into the new agency that is now formed in April?
That's correct. We have a spill response team, and we follow up on all reports that are given to us on any type of spill.
Okay. So let's talk about what happens. And we'll use this as the backdrop, obviously, Dave. This is one of the reasons we reach out, because a lot of people are talking about it. There's a lot of questions. So I think just – what I first wanted to do was walk me through the process as far as I call the Department of now Environmental Quality. I work for an oil and gas company. And you know what? I think something's off here. So I call and look, we've got a spill, whether it's a pipeline or whatever. What happens next when it's been reported to the state of North Dakota, Dave?
Sure. You know, first of all, I should point out that North Dakota has a zero tolerance. That means all spills need to be reported no matter what the quantity is, and they should be reported within 24 hours within finding the spill. And so once we get that report, we take a look at it, and we try to get out and observe or investigate each one of those. I can't say we get to all of them, but we get to most of them. And so we go out and verify, you know, what is the release, what is it, what's the impact, is there any public health or environmental health issues, and that's how we started, and that's how this Garden Creek facility also was investigated.
Okay, well then I think the obvious question is, if that's how it was investigated, how did we go from 10 gallons to now, years later, well, no, in fact, it's much larger than that. What fell through the cracks, Dave?
Well, I don't think anything fell through the cracks. Okay. And if you look at the initial spill report, it shows volume spilled. But on that same report, just a couple sentences below, it said that it was determined that the ground around the pipe was saturated with natural gas condensate of an unknown volume. And so at that point, we flagged it, said there's something here more than 10 gallons. We need to do some work. What we do then is we ask the company, direct the company to evaluate where it is and where it isn't, is there any public health threats, risk, and what's the environmental health risk? And they do that. Once they've delineated the extent of it, then we tell them to clean it up. And in this case, they started pumping out liquid out of the ground. It is contained on the property site. They continue to remediate it. At no point were we ever able to get an estimate. But to be honest with you, the part that's most important to us is what's the impact to public health in the environment and get that rectified as soon as possible.
Okay. Dave Glad is our guest. We're talking about some of the reporting coming out on a gas processing plant out near Watford City. Originally came in, reported 10 gallons of liquid natural gas spill. Now reporting, and Dave, I want to ask you, so you've got a website that apparently something was leaked internally from the company saying, well, it's 11 million gallons. What's your take on the 11 million gallons? Is that an accurate estimate in your opinion or the state of North Dakota?
No, it's not. And if you look at the memo, first of all, it's a draft memo that was dated November 9th, 2018. So it's nothing official. In there, they mention 11 million gallons, but that isn't 11 million gallons released. That was used as a design parameter as they design their next phase of remediation. So no part of that is this is how much was released. They're just using that to give them kind of a boundary of how they should start designing their remediation system.
And about the remediation, I do note that, you know, they said, well, it'll take about 10 years. We're 4 years into that. Now they're saying, well, we're going to need an additional 10 years. Is that common, or is that just case by case? Explain the remediation, how that works, I guess, is sure. Probably the appropriate way.
Yeah, the first thing they want to do is that if there's any liquid to be recovered, any free phase or liquid product, condensate, and if that can be pulled out of the ground, they do that first. And they recover as much as that as possible. But you still have soil that's contaminated, that the liquid doesn't move through the soil very well, so they have to look at a different remediation technique or different way to clean up the soil. Their next step, after they've pulled out as much liquid as they can, is to start what they call a soil vapor extraction, to move air through the subsurface to evaporate that contamination, and also to kind of kickstart the natural bacteria that can utilize the condensate as a food source. And that's the second phase, to clean it up. As far as the length of time, a lot of that depends on how much contaminant's there in the geology. But yeah, you can say 5 to 10 years, that it may be more or less than that, just depending on how effective their remediation system is. So I think that's an accurate estimate.
Dave, one of the questions, you know, I mean, we talk about spills, unfortunately, throughout the development of the oil and natural gas out there. And when we talk about, well, what the environmental impact, you know, you've got oil, you've got brine, saltwater, whatever you want to call that, and then you've got the natural gas. If you had to rate the three as far as the environmental impact of the three, where does the natural gas, the liquid natural gas, fall into that?
It's probably two and three, kind of in that, you know, the as far as being the produced water, the high salt water, the high salt content of water, that stuff is really tough to clean up. And they take a lot of time to recondition the soil and get plants growing, and that is more difficult than dealing with oil or the condensate. Condensate is evaporates very quickly, and so there are treatment techniques that we can put to it that really remediate it a lot faster than the produced water, salt contaminated, or oil.
Dave Glad, our guest, he's the director of North Dakota's Department of Environmental Quality. I just got a couple more questions for you, and this is kind of on the business side of it, Dave. So it's noted that, you know, this was an internal pipeline, so there was no metering done. When it comes to oversight of that, should there be a requirement, whether it's internally or transporting offsite, of metering these pipelines?
Well, there's several different type of pipelines, and you know, there are a lot of pipelines out there that go across the countryside that are metered, and that they continuously monitor them for any leaks. Usually, on the pipelines within inside a facility boundary, some of them are metered, some of them aren't. And so that's a little bit different. I do think, you know, the company is going to be taking a hard look at this to see should they meter everything, because this remediation is costing them a lot of money. So is it cheaper to put meters on the pipelines versus cleaning up the soil? I think they would probably find metering would be better.
Okay.
You can do metering. You can do pressure testing periodically to make sure that the integrity of the pipe is there. So there's a couple of other different methods that they can use to periodically check the pipeline.
Final question for you, and I think that's accurate. I mean, my personal, of course, I'm not involved in the industry. I've been around it to where, look, you know, put that upfront cost in to where you prevent the additional cost in the back end that's going to be in cleaning up and just prevent the disasters from happening. Final question, and it's got to do just with I've got two more, because I want to ask you one more after this. Sorry, I'm double dipping on you. So this, it's based on the company's self-reporting, and you mentioned the zero tolerance. It's got to be within 24 hours. Company needs to report it to the state of North Dakota. Do you, and in this instance, it seems that they have, and that they said, look, we got 10 gallons. But, you know, there's people that will question whether or not companies are going to accurately tell you, hey, here's what the real situation is. Do you at all sense that, whether it's One Oak or there's been any business out there that's tried to cover up the impact of an accident like this?
Well, and that's one of the reasons, you know, first and foremost, to report it, regardless of the accuracy of their volumes, report it. what really makes a difference to us is what is the actual impact on the environment and what is the public health risk. That is assessed regardless of the volume. And once we identify what that is, then whatever it takes to clean that up or mitigate that risk, that's what it takes, regardless of what the volume is. So although the volume is a nice number to have, that isn't the main thing we need. We just need the report to begin with. Then we can start addressing the public health impact.
Okay. Final question for you. I promise this is the last one. So this isn't the first time that we've had a pipeline leak or a spill of some sort. Is there anything that you would recommend to the lawmakers that are listening to me right now on what needs to change in the state to better respond or prevent a situation like we're talking about today?
Well, I think it's going to take the government, industry, and local cooperation to figure out the best way to go forward. I personally believe that better monitoring, better metering would be the way to go. So if we can identify these spills or these leaks before they cause any major issues, that would be the appropriate method. Now it's trying to figure out what is the right technology, and there are people working on that to develop a technology that is cost-effective, and not only for the industry, but it'd be cost-effective for environmental protection. So I believe that's the direction things should go. Okay.
Dave, I always appreciate it when I call you answer, and you're never afraid to come on and take the questions.
Well, I appreciate your time, and if I may,
yeah.
10 seconds. One thing we did learn from this is that the public does want accurate information, and so we're looking at how do we do that better to make the information we do have in our files more transparent. So, stay tuned. We're going to see if we can make that a little more readily available to where they can go to our webpage and find out about things such as Garden Creek and what's the status update on that in a more efficient manner.
Well,
that's what we're looking at doing.
Very good. When those updates are up and ready, you can come right back on here, and we'll get out to a large audience for you. All right, Dave?
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You bet. You have a good afternoon. Dave Glatt, he is the director of North Dakota's Department of Environmental Quality. Going to have a lot more to say on this and just the state of oversight in North Dakota.